there was something major missing from the whole system in place to support people. And what that was demonstrating to these guys and girls who are out on our streets that they have value, that they have worth, and treating them with dignity and respect. I've seen how other services operate. I'd seen how they speak to people. I'd sat in on meetings where people were waiting to get into a supported accommodation, which is meant to be there to help them. And the interview process was vulgar. It was full of profanities. This is from the people interviewing them. And the whole attitude of the services is like, why should we do this for you? You know, what's in it for us? And to me, that's just that is wrong. There's no dignity, there's no respect in there. I don't care where somebody's situation has taken them, they still deserve dignity and respect.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Running Tales, the podcast which, normally at least, tells the story of everyday runners who've done extraordinary things. My name's Craig Lewis and this week we have a slightly different podcast episode featuring the man whose voice you just heard, Stan Robertson. He's the founder of Northampton-based Rough Sleeper charity Project 1615. And on March the 23rd this year, Running Tales will be helping put on the second annual 1615 charity run, a friendly, relaxed event at the racecourse in Northampton, England, that offers entrants the opportunity to run for as short or longer distance as they like over a six-hour period. The aim is to raise awareness of the plight of rough sleepers and the work that Project 1615 does. And you can find out all the details about the event in our show notes, including information about how you can donate to Project 1615. Stan Robertson started Project 1615 back in 2018, during the infamous Beast from the East cold snap. And he began delivering tea, coffee and hot food to rough sleepers in the town. A former rough sleeper and addict himself, Stan turned his life around after finding religion, and he's now a street pastor. His overriding aim is to bring dignity and respect to those on the streets. And I spoke to him about the dangers that rough sleepers face every single day, Suella Braverman's now infamous portrayal of rough sleeping as a lifestyle choice, and how his own experiences help him to connect with those on the streets. Now, just before we go on to talk to Stan, I want to talk to you again about how we've partnered with Grayson Murphy, the 2x world mountain running champion, to offer our readers a 20% discount on the incredible Racing Grayson training log and planner. The log and planner is your key to staying organized and inspired to conquer all your running goals. Users can dive into their race schedule and goal setting worksheet, empowering them to plan and achieve objectives effectively. It's a really fantastic offer from Grayson Murphy, an absolutely top level runner on the track and on the trails. The Racing Grayson training log and planner is genuinely your companion to chasing your wildest dreams, helping you seize each day with purpose and passion. And as I said, you can take advantage of our 20% discount. To do so, simply head over to www.racing-grayson.com and check out the product page there, using the code RUNNINGTAILS20 to get that discount. Again, have a look in our show notes, all the details are there. Right, now back to this week's podcast and our chat with Pastor Stan Robertson. I started off our conversation by asking him whether he'd actually be running at the Project 1615 charity run on March the 23rd.
That's open to possibilities. There's never a no, never a yes, but you just don't know. I might manage a centimetre or two.
And you've just dropped a bombshell on me that you were previously a cross country champion.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of athletics and running. Actually, cross country is something I used to really enjoy. Mainly school and everything, but I did do a lot of athletics meets for Hertfordshire schools, for the schools when I was in Hertfordshire. I think the best ever meet I did was where I actually ran and won the 110 meter hurdles, then the 200 meters, which I won. I also did the 400 meters, which I won, and I won the 1600 after that, all in one meet. So yeah, well, I used to do quite a lot of running, you know. But then, you know, you some of us grow out of it.
Well, it's only immature people like me who carry on doing crazy running. But we're obviously putting on this
this event, and you're the man behind charity Project 1615, which we'll talk about in detail in a bit. But how important is a run like this, and why should people come along and take part?
Well, it's important. One, it's important because it does raise some important finances for the charity, which goes into the work that we do. But more so, it raises awareness of what we do and why we do it. That is more important to me, really. Then, you know, the money's needed, but the awareness is more important, because the more people we can raise awareness within of what this is really about within the homelessness arena and the street arena, the more chance we've ever got of combating it, you know, and that is what we're really about.
Yeah, and we've both, in these start of this conversation, sort of used homelessness and the street arena and rough sleeping a bit interchangeably. But the thing that's very different about what you do and what Project 1615 do is that you are a rough sleeper rather than purely a homelessness charity. For people who might not know, what's the difference?
Well, homelessness is generally anybody who doesn't have a home of their own where they can close their own front door. Anybody in supported or temporary accommodation, whether it's a flat, a room or a shared house or something, is classed as homeless. Anyone that's in a refuge or a hotel is classed as homeless. Anyone that is staying with friends is classed as homeless. And also, if you're on the streets, obviously you're classed as homeless. But rough sleeping and is those who are actually not inside at all, those who are actually on the streets, sleeping in the doorways, et cetera, which is something a lot of people do get confused about, because, you know, people will support a homeless charity, a homeless charity, and automatically think, oh, we're looking after rough sleepers. But in 95% of the cases, you're actually looking after the bigger picture of homelessness, and very little actually reaches rough sleepers.
Yeah, and while it's obviously important to help everyone in the homelessness arena, is it fair to say that rough sleepers are the most vulnerable people in that cohort, if you like?
Well, absolutely, because they've got no protection. They are literally out there in the open. I mean, they can get to drop-ins during the day when they're open, and there's different things, maybe go sit in a library or something. But once everything's closed, once the drop-ins have closed, once the library's closed, and you know, after office hours, generally as a rule, you'll find there is nowhere to go. And this is a community of people who literally are on the pavement in front of you, and that's where they have to sleep and wake up. So yeah, they're extremely vulnerable from various forms of attack and abuse and just anything going, to be honest.
We spoke a lot in the past, in my previous role at the BBC and so on, about some of the challenges that people on the streets do face. And it is everything from tents being set on fire, from people coming out of clubs and attacking rough sleepers, either physically or quite often through sexual abuse as well. There really is not very much that these people don't have to put up with.
Absolutely right. I mean, we see it we're not seeing it as much in such numbers as we were a few years ago, because obviously numbers dropped post lockdown, but now they are on the rise again. We are seeing an increase of people being released straight from prison to the street, which is a whole new dimension of issues, because, I mean, if they've gone to prison for whatever reason, but they may have been carrying an addiction or alcoholism or something, and they've spent some time in prison getting dry, getting clean, getting the medication, getting the counselling, getting the support, and then they're being released straight back into that environment. You know, so that creates a whole new level of problems, because then you've got a whole group of people who want to stay clean, but find themselves unable to do so because, you know, they're surrounded again by those that will supply and deal, and by others that are using, and a lack of services available to lift them up and help them move on from where prison had got them. So then they end up on this complete cycle, where we've actually got two women on our street right now who were released straight from prison to the street, you know, and which is even more frightening, to be honest, because the women are so much more vulnerable.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And we've spoken in the past about some of the pressures and the sexual abuse that women had faced on the streets, both from fellow rough sleepers and from people falling out of clubs and all that sort of stuff. But I'm intrigued by how Project 1615 started, and what made you, because lots of people will go, oh, I care a lot about homelessness. I don't want to see people sleeping rough. But what made you actually go out and do something about it?
Well, for me, it was a part of because of my history, having lived through a lot of what these guys lived through, having spent time on the streets myself and having an inbuilt passion and compassion for people in that situation. But on its own, that isn't always enough motivation to get up and do something, because lots of people who have been in these environments who have dealt with addictions. You know, myself have been through the system, the care system, the prison system. I've never hidden my past from anybody. You know, it's there to be seen. But that isn't always enough to drive people to actually go out and do something. For me, it was the realization that there was something major missing from the whole system in place to support people. And what that was demonstrating to these guys and girls who are out on our streets that they have value, that they have worth, and treating them with dignity and respect. You know, I've seen how other services operate. I'd seen how they speak to people. I'd sat in on meetings where people were waiting to get into a supported accommodation, which is meant to be there to help them. And the interview process was vulgar. It was full of profanities. This is from the people interviewing them. And the whole attitude of the services is like, why should we do this for you? You know, what's in it for us? And to me, that's just that is wrong. There's no dignity. There's no respect in there. And I don't care where somebody's situation has taken them. They still deserve dignity and respect. And they still have the right to have the opportunity to realize that their situations and their circumstances do not create their hope, does not dictate their worth and their value as a human being. So this was the thing that was missing for me. I think I shared with you before, one thing that I do and I make a habit of doing is making sure that my wife has a cup of tea in the morning. At 6 o'clock in the morning, she has a cup of tea. You know, and if I'm on the rare occasion I'm not here at six to do it, I'll make sure the cup is there with the tea bag in it and everything. It's not about the tea. It's about the fact that she knows I was thinking about her that morning, whatever I was doing. And you know, and it says that you have value to me. That you're worth, you know, you're worth something important to me. And that was what, in a sense, triggered me to take this to the street, to demonstrate. Started off with just that, really, a flask of tea and a rucksack full of bacon sandwiches. That's how it was. And well, you were there. You saw, you know, not long after we started, you were there. You saw it. And it was just that demonstration to people that, you know what, you are worth more than your situation dictates that you are. And your value is beyond your circumstances. And when you install that in somebody enough times, when you keep coming back, because that's the important thing, you've got to keep coming back. You can't just go out once and say, oh, you're important to me, mate, never see you again. But you keep coming back. What that does is it enables people to raise their sights above where they sit so they can see that they can achieve more. They can move into an accommodation. They can get off the street. They can go to the drug rehabilitation or to another agency that can offer that next step. It enables them to do it. And that's what it was for me.
You hear about that sort of positive affirmation in everyday life when people these days talk about mental health issues, when you're in a business environment and you talk about praising staff and that can move someone on. Some premiership footballers need a stick, some of us need a carrot. But that must be so much more profound when you're talking about rough sleepers who perhaps have never had that positive affirmation before in their whole lives.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, you mean every single one of these guys and girls, they weren't born on the street. They didn't go to school, go to careers day and think, well, my ambition in life is to sit in a doorway with a needle in my arm curled under a dirty, smelly blanket. That was never their ambition in life. But for every single one of these people, there has been a moment of trauma. Something has happened. And addiction is a result of trauma. And the behavior that you see, the aggressive behavior, the antisocial behavior is a result of that addiction. But it all links back to trauma. Something has happened. It could be abuse. A lot of cases, it is abuse. A lot of people have been abused and have ended up out there, have ended up walking the beat on prostitution or living on the doorway. But they've turned to a substance to numb the pain of what's happened to them. We had a guy a long time ago, he's now passed away, unfortunately, but before he did, we manage to reunite him with his family in Scotland. But for him, it was that he was from out of town, but both his stepmom and his stepdad died in a short space of time. So grief was his trigger, and he turned to spice. in order to numb that. Yeah, I mean, it ended in with a good story because he did get reunited with his family in Scotland, but the damage was done, and unfortunately, he did pass away a year or so after that. But at least for a period of time, he was able to escape that. You know, so it just goes back to that trigger, and when you step in the midst of all that chaos going on and all that fight for survival. And I mean, I call it the arena of tears for a reason, because there's been a lot of tears shed out there over these last nearly 7 years. But when you step into that with a declaration of hope, because that's what it is, it's a declaration of hope, and you're declaring, you know something, you are worth enough for us to come to you. We're just not going to sit behind the door and say, if you want help, you come to us. This is what you're worth. You're worth it. We're going to come because you're worth that. And we're going to keep coming, and we're going to keep giving you a cup of tea or a mocha or a latte or whatever it is you want. We're going to keep bringing you a breakfast. We're going to keep making sure you are safe, that you feel that you can achieve more. And we'll keep coming back until we don't see you here anymore, because you have achieved more, you know, and that is what Project 1615 is. You know, it's a support network that is non-existent in any other network.
Are you suggesting, Stan, that rough sleeping and homelessness isn't a lifestyle choice?
Absolutely, it's not a lifestyle choice. You know, and I'm glad you can say that jestingly, because you know my thought on that. You know, it is not a lifestyle choice. No one chooses this life. Addiction isn't a lifestyle choice. It's like you quite often hear that. Oh yeah, I mean, you hear from other areas, from other agencies. Oh yeah, you know, all these people, they've been offered somewhere. No, it's not a question of offering somebody somewhere, because even that isn't a choice. Do I take it? Do I not? The choice is, how do I survive today? How do I get from here to the next hour? Where do I find a toilet today? Where can I get a cup of water today? Where can I sit today where I can avoid the Class A dealers, because I want to get off this rubbish, and I can avoid them because they know it's my payday and they're going to come and take my money. And the drop-in facilities sometimes aren't the safest space, because those that want to keep people addicted to these substances of death, they know where to find them. They know, you know, they can walk into the same places as every single one of these guys is. So they spend their time trying to hide, trying to survive, you know, and just trying to get through to another day. There is a saying that, you know, we are free to choose. We're not free not to choose. And we're not free to choose the consequences of our choices, which is a very true saying. We've all got a choice we can make. And at some point in these guys and girls' life, a choice was made. You know, often that choice is the result of other people's choices, that they become the consequence of what somebody else has done or what situation has caused for them. But then, of course, there are consequences to their choices. And a lot of these consequences are simply just trying to survive, just trying to get through the day and putting up with the abuse and the humiliation that comes with it. And that whole stigma of worthlessness and dehumanization.
And I ask that question, as you know, in a really facetious way, but also with a serious thing behind it, because you had a real battle against the then Northampton Borough Council when they tried to bring it in, when they tried to say that this was a lifestyle choice. And at the time, a lot of people in power, in authority, didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with what they were saying. And actually, it was really striking when Suella Braverman and the current government came out with the same thing a few months ago, and everybody was outraged by it. And actually, you sort of thought, why were people in Northamptonshire not thinking like that 4 years ago when the local council came up with that? Because as you've just so eloquently described, it's a crazy situation. And I think the bottom line is that these people need to be given a fresh choice, but they need to be believed in before they have the ability to make that choice.
But they also need to be given the ability to believe in themselves.
Yeah.
Because self-belief is so important. You know, that's all part of the value worth process that we go through in our lives. You know, we have to believe in ourselves. I mean, you see it across the whole arena of poverty, because, I mean, obviously this is part of the whole poverty arena.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and poverty is not just a lack of food in the cupboard. It's not just a lack of money in the bank. Poverty is a mental, it's a mental thing. It's an emotional thing. It's a physical thing. You know, I mean, I call it the mindset of poverty. It gets stuck on you and it's very, very hard to shift. And so rough sleeping is just a small part of that whole concept of poverty. It's about educating people to grasp and see that You know, this is humanity. Society has done this. Society in some role has caused this, you know, and society then has a responsibility to put it right, you know, to help each other, to put things right and to make things right. Killing with kindness is what you were getting at.
Yeah.
That was the thing they were saying about 2019 time, wasn't it? Killing with kindness. That was the thing. They were putting up posters all over the town, killing with kindness. And the basic accusation was every time you give someone a sandwich, you're encouraging them to come out on the street and not seek the help that they should be seeking. And what they failed to miss was every time you go out in the morning and hopefully wake somebody up and give them that kickstart to the day, you are actually enabling them to then move on to the other agencies and other services and get the other help that they need. They completely missed that bit out. I don't think they did it on purpose by any thought of the imagination. And you know, I don't think there was any malicious intent or anything within that. They were just uneducated.
And I think the other thing I want to touch upon actually was your own personal story to a degree. You've mentioned yourself that you were homeless, you were in the care system, you did spend some time in prison, you had your own addictions and so on to deal with. And I think that's quite an interesting part of your dynamic with the people you help now, because actually you can properly understand and talk to them in a way that some agencies, like who middle class grammar school boys like me, can't necessarily do.
It does help, because obviously I understand the language, I understand the issues, I understand the pain people are going through, understand the dynamics of the streets. I mean, the dynamics change obviously as time goes by because everything changes, but the basic fight for survival remains the same. The constant anger against the government, against local government, against the councils, against the bigger agencies that only seem to want to take is very real. That's never changed. That was always the same. There's always that constant anger and bitterness towards everything. When you understand that, I think in 7 years, I have only been had a verbal confrontation with two rough sleepers in 7 years, and I've only ever been threatened by one. Every other issue I've ever had, and every other confrontation I've had, has been from members of the public who have taken offence to the fact that I'm supporting people that they believe or have. Swallowed the agenda that this is a choice level, that they don't need to be there, that there are options available, that they're just beggars, that they're, you know, they're just out to rob and con people. So that's where I've had most of my issues. But having been through it, I do understand where the anger and the animosity and the bitterness from street level. And, you know, and as you know, we are, as a charity, we are actually the only registered street level rough sleeper charity, to my knowledge, in Northamptonshire. We're the only charity, to my knowledge, in the whole of the UK that does breakfast in bed for the rough sleepers. There isn't another one that I've come across that does what we do 7 days a week that is fully registered. Having that ability to be able to sit with somebody in the early hours of the morning in that most private of spaces, which is literally their bedroom, and to sit there and know where they're coming from, to understand their story, to be able to put my arm around them and give them a hug while they're sticking a needle in their other arm because they need that hit for the morning, and then offer them a cup of tea without any judgment, without any prejudice, without any of these issues that as a society we're kind of taught to have. I don't think I could do that, all of that, without the lived experiences that I have. And I said, so yeah, I think that's vital.
And also because that was your own experience, wasn't it? It was a lack of judgment from somebody else, which helped you eventually. And I know it was a long process, but helped you eventually to turn your life around.
Yeah, my faith story is part of my life. Obviously, I mean, when I was actually faced with that by an old lady in her 80s at the time, we're going back a while. I mean, I actually worked it out the other day. 32 years this was. That means I'm 32 years clean of Class A drugs now. That is the miracle in my life. I was presented with a choice, you know, and somebody actually stood there, took my hand and told me that I had value, you know, and that was the start of my journey. And it's been a bumpy road. I mean, you know, it's been ups and downs and all kinds of things, but there always will be. But for me, my faith is strong to me. It's a real good strength to me to get me through. I've taken a lot of knocks and a lot of hits on this journey in the last 7 years from various places. And I think my family and my faith have kept me strong because they've been strong for me.
And just finally, for people who might be thinking about donating, about taking part in this run, about simply talking about it to raise that awareness you spoke about at the start, why is it so important for them to do it? And how are they going to be helping so many people by doing so?
Well, it's important because of that word awareness. Awareness is vital. We need to re-educate ourselves. We need to understand that behind every blanket there is humanity lives behind. You know, or what I say, there's humanity behind every blanket. It's one of my little go-to catchphrases, I suppose. I must have quite a few of them by now, I suppose. But you know, when we understand, when we can get to a point where we can look at that huddled mass of humanity, that this is a broken person. And when we can get to a point where we can look at that brokenness and actually realize that is somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's grandchild, somebody's mom, someone's dad, someone's grandparent, you know, that is a human being. You know, that is the awareness we want to raise with people. It's not about drug awareness. It's not about alcoholism awareness. We don't need to do that because we know that stuff is going on and we know these people have addictions and they have issues that they have to overcome. That's another part of the journey. You know, this is just about the grassroots street level awareness. When you look at somebody, don't look down at them. Realize they're a person. You haven't got to give them money. You haven't got to offer them food, you know, but you can say hello. You can, you know, you can ask how you go, and you can say, is there someone I can call for you? You can make a simple gesture and have a conversation. Give somebody enable somebody to feel like they're human, to feel like they're worth some time, that they have some value in your life. And that goes a long, long way, much further than a Greg sausage roll or a cup of coffee sometimes, you know. It's a much better option. So, yeah, and obviously with the fundraising through this and the donations, everything we do, I mean, we are 100% voluntary. There are no wages in Project 1615 at all. And I think some people miss that. They think, oh, it's a charity. All charities, they're getting paid. CEOs get lots of money. Your managers get lots of money. But we are 100% voluntary. We have been since we've started. And that's something I have determined to maintain all this time, because we don't want to profit from other people's poverty. That is so important to us and to what we do. Because once you start profiting from it, then you're actually, you know, you're not doing a service to anybody. It becomes all about you and about what you need and what you want, you know, and it becomes a business with people and humanity being the commodity of your business. So we don't go down that road. We're totally voluntary. So every penny we get in, and we don't get massive amounts, but we don't go without, if that makes sense. But every penny we get in covers our costs. It goes into providing a tent, a sleeping bag, a meal. It goes towards, because obviously we run the food banks, well, the Dignity Pantry, not a food bank. We run that pantry system so we can actually help support other areas of poverty. And we look after some of the schools and the breakfast clubs, got some women's refuges, bits and pieces like that. Because it's about tackling that mindset as well, because we don't want to see the next generation end up where this generation has. So we're trying to work into that. And all of this, it does cost money, because obviously we've got to run things. I've got to keep the vehicle going and, you know, we've got to cook and everything. And that's where our money goes. And it goes back onto the streets and it's ploughed back into the arena.
Stan, you know, I think it's a really important message, a really important work that you do. So thank you for talking through it today, for joining me on the Running Tales podcast. And for anyone listening to this who's wondering why we didn't speak more about running, well, just remember that Stan was a cross-country champion and he's going to run at this Project 1615 run. So thanks, Stan.
I didn't say that.
Thanks again to Stan Robertson for joining us on this week's episode of the Running Tales podcast. I know we didn't have as much running as we normally like to have, but I hope you all agree that this was a really good cause and a really interesting conversation. If you do enjoy the podcast that we do here for Running Tales, please give us a positive rating and a positive review wherever you listen. It really does help other people find the podcast. Also, remember that you can check out all our stories, normally much more about running than this one, on our Substack newsletter. That can be found at www.runningtales.substack.com.
And if I can also once again draw your attention to our fantastic discount offer with Grayson Murphy for the Racing Grayson Training Log and Planner. 20% discount, simply head over to www.racing-grayson.com and use the code RUNNINGTAILS20. All the details are in this episode's show notes, so make sure you take advantage of that fantastic offer. And I'll see you again next week for another Running Tails podcast.